The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Happy Thanksgiving from me, Kurt Benrood, from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and from all of the readers whose voices you will hear later as we present A Little Drama for Turkey Day. Sixteen Types of Sweet Potatoes by Kenny Walsh. This is set in the present day. This is a Friendsgiving celebration on the Saturday before Thanksgiving. Our cast of characters:
Joanna Harith as Phyllis,
Laura Arwood as Marjorie,
Melanie Simmons as Charlotte,
Angela Callahan on sound effect.
Neither Phyllis nor Marjorie know how to arrive fashionably late for a dinner. Phyllis stands in Charlotte's dining room waiting for other guests to arrive when Marjorie approaches her.
Phyllis, you must try the little meatballs they're to die for.
Maybe later.
You're past the age when you have to worry about your figure.
How old do you think I am?
I just meant that no one would notice a few extra pounds on you. Not during the holiday season.
Marjorie Meadows, don't talk to me that way.
Charlotte can't hear us in the kitchen. Just the two of us. We can be honest with one another.
Not that kind of honest. We've only met twice.
Lighten up. Have a meatball. They're delicious.
I'm a vegetarian.
Since when?
Third week in August. I gave up all meat.
Just cold turkey?
No turkey at all.
How can you celebrate Friendsgiving without eating turkey?
There'll be 16 types of sweet potatoes if the other guests ever show up.
Sweet potatoes aren't tradition. Gravy dribbled over succulent slices of a juicy bird. That's tradition.
I don't need this made-up Friendsgiving holiday celebrating an old-fashioned meal with friends the weekend before Thanksgiving. I don't have a psychologist lecturing me to avoid family stress and to substitute a network of friends. I actually enjoy family visits.
But does your family know you're a vegetarian?
Not yet, but I probably...
So you came to this party to practice for your big reveal. Who else have you told?
No one. I only told you because you offered me meatballs.
I'm sure delighted to be the first. Did you choose me because
I didn't choose you.
Because you thought I'd be a good ally or a good sparring partner?
We're the only two here.
Sparring partner it is.
Marjorie, I hate to break this to you, but my diet choices don't revolve around you.
Oh, so it's a diet. That makes more sense. I thought you looked trimmer since I saw you last.
I haven't lost any weight.
And you've been eating this way since August. Dear, it is time to find another meal plan.
I don't eat meat because...
It's a guy, isn't it? You want to impress some tree-sitting herbivore who never showers.
Why wouldn't he shower?
They never do. Those types just rinse off in the river with natural soaps and no deodorant. Is his body over why you didn't bring him today?
Oh.
Enter Charlotte, the host.
Phyllis, you don't look happy. This is Friendsgiving, a time when we can just be ourselves. Relax.
Oh. I would like nothing more than to relax, Charlotte.
It'll get easier when the other guests arrive. I see you've already found the Chardonnay.
Yeah, thanks. I've been talking with Marjorie. The Chardonnay helps.
The other guests should be here soon. But Carly and Mike texted that they'll be late.
Carly? Was she your friend who got drunk last year and fondled your husband, Jacob?
Marjorie, dear, that was all your imagination. If you plan to bring that up again, please leave now.
I'm glad all is forgiven. I thought you'd think twice before inviting me again.
That reminds me. You avoid Jacob this afternoon. Phyllis, have you tried the meatballs? Marjorie said they're quite good.
Shouldn't have said that. Look at the steam blowing out her ears.
Phyllis, what's wrong?
She's a vegetarian now.
A vegetarian? Oh, I see. I'll be back in a sec.
You scared away our host.
Likely she ran out to avoid more conversation with you.
I don't like your tone. You must really have it bad for Sammy Sunflower Seeds.
There is no Sammy Sunflower Seeds.
Oh, Samantha Sunflower Seeds?
Well, I don't need you scolding me for what I should or shouldn't be doing.
I really don't care a lick about your sexual habits.
How would you react if I started prying into your sex life? Are you getting it routinely?
I just want everyone to have a good time. I'm Charlotte's oldest friend, so she left it up to me to keep the crowds entertained while she's in the kitchen.
Did she ask you to get up in everyone's face?
Not exactly.
Did she ask you to start pushing people to help themselves to the table's food before the turkey even got out of the oven?
Certainly not.
Then what did Charlotte ask you?
To get out of the kitchen while she cooked.
I found it.
What's it?
I ordered the Ginsu Vegemator online, just in case anything like this happens.
What's a Vegemator? It looks like a spaceman's rifle.
According to the instructions on the box, the Vegemator converts animal tissue into plant tissue.
Ground beef will become...
tofu.
And pork chops turn into...
fava beans.
I don't believe you.
Marjorie, please plug this cord into the outlet under the table behind you. Phyllis, while she's doing that, can you put some meatballs on a plate?
Okay.
Put enough on there for all of us to try.
Okay, we're good.
I bought the deluxe model of the Vegemator because it has the savory setting.
What's the savory setting for?
It picks the optimal flavor setting for the conversions. Okay, sit the plate down and back away.
The meatballs look exactly the same.
They should retain their meatball-y texture.
They still spring back against my toothpick.
Let me try one. This is good. I mean, really good.
But nothing happened.
Let me try one.
These are even better than the meaty meatballs.
You're right. What's that flavor?
It's kind of nutty.
Quinoa. Exactly. Phyllis, try one.
You're pulling my leg.
No, you really have to try one.
What about the animal fat?
It's all changed to olive oil.
You're kidding.
Try one, you'll see.
I'll just try a half.
For Christ's sakes, it's only a little meatball, not a half-pound burger.
Oh, my God. That's heavenly.
Didn't we tell you?
I get nutty flavors, and there's no meat in this.
Not anymore.
Can't be this good. Oh,
believe it.
This is a joke. The whole crock pot must have these balls in it. Oh, it's awful.
Told you.
Hey, I made these from scratch.
From scratch?
I poured the frozen meatballs and the sauce together, and it took 3 hours for the crock pot to cook it from scratch.
Oh, let's try the Vegemator on the turkey. It should be cool enough to carve some now.
From scratch? You never learned to cook?
I was the youngest daughter of 4, so I never learned to do anything in the kitchen.
What was your role in the family?
I was the performer. Ballet was my specialty.
Oh, lucky you mastered a practical homemaker skill.
You have been on my back from the moment I spoke.
After last year's blow-up, I'm surprised Charlotte invited you back.
I promise to be on my best behavior.
Oh, is that even when Charlotte is out of earshot?
Are you just trying to pick a fight?
Just like visiting family.
Except I can walk away.
No, you can't. Not if it's like family. I haven't even apologized yet.
When will that happen?
If Friendsgiving simulates a family dinner, expect an apology right before you leave.
Then let's call a temporary truce for Charlotte's sake. She wants everyone to enjoy the party.
God, she's gone out of her way. The price tag is still on the Vegemator box.
I can't believe she paid that much. That's a month's salary for me.
She really wants everyone to be happy.
What are we going to do?
Eat more meatballs.
You dish them out and I'll plug the gun in under here again.
Same nutty flavor.
I can even taste the olive oil.
Oh, good. You've made some more meatless balls.
They're really delicious.
Let me try another. I'm going vegetarian.
That really isn't the point to vegetarian.
The point is really good food.
No, the point is that...
Let's see what it can do with some hot turkey slices. Dig in, girl.
What is an exquisite taste?
Roasted wild mushrooms.
This is the best mouthful I've ever tasted.
Who knew that meat could taste this good?
Wait, what did you say?
I never knew meat could taste this good.
But this isn't meat.
Well, it was.
Oh, it's making me quiver.
What do you mean when you say quiver?
Down in my female parts. Do mushrooms stimulate the libido?
Oh, yeah, these do.
Less yapping, more tasting.
I've got 14 more pounds of turkey in the kitchen.
I'm just going to sit here all afternoon in a dark corner with a plate of this turkey.
I was only looking forward to Carly's yams when I came over. You really got your money's worth for that Vegemator.
You looked up the cost.
You left the price tag on the box.
Oh, I'd better get that box out of here before the other guests see it. Don't breathe a word.
Of course not. Not an ostentatious bone in her body.
She's a perfect host. Like I told you, nothing and no one will ruin her parties.
This is not at all like Thanksgiving with my family.
Right. Where else could you find those mouth-watering mushrooms? What's so funny?
I pictured my great Aunt Josie savoring those mushrooms.
What would she be like? I want the whole drumstick.
Would the Vegemator keep the drumstick bone hard, or would it go flaccid?
Let's wait until Charlotte's male friends leave before trying that out. Some would not appreciate the humor, nor the lack of turkey meat.
Well, if Charlotte still has 14 pounds in the kitchen, I think we're going to have plenty of meat to experiment. Oh, my God!
What is it?
I'm a vegetarian!
What is it?
She's a vegetarian!
I thought we were keeping that a secret.
That is not the point. Meat is murder.
That's why the Vegemator is revolutionary.
But it's not, don't you see?
Not really, dear.
The Vegemator converts animal-based food into plant-based food.
Mushrooms are technically fungi, not plants.
But the point is that you need to kill an animal to have a target for the Vegemator.
Oh.
Oh.
So you can't be a vegetarian if you eat turkey-shaped mushrooms?
Right. Send the gun back.
But the Vegemated food gets my drumstick drive all revved up. And yours, too. I can't put down this turkey.
A matter of principles.
So you were okay with eating converted turkey if you'd never seen the Vegemator gun?
Well, yeah. But that doesn't make it right.
Don't tell me what's right or wrong about how I get pleasured.
Phil, can you forgive me?
You were well-intentioned. Nothing to forgive.
Well, what'll happen then?
I'll chow down on extra green bean casserole and we'll all enjoy a good meal together.
Then I should put away the Vegemator. Could you reach down and unplug it?
No way, sister. I want to shoot every last bite I have this evening.
What are you talking about? Be careful where you point that.
I'm a vegetarian now. Back away from the meatballs.
Marjorie, what's come over you?
I'm not stopping now. It's been too long since I savored a juicy drumstick. Years since I had a really pleasurable drumstick.
Oh.
I don't want your pity during the holiday season.
No pity. We've all been there.
You've got Jacob. You don't need the drumstick.
Listen to yourself.
I know how to handle this.
Don't point that gun this way.
Don't zap me into a bean salad.
I won't harm either of you. I just need the Vegemator.
Slowly lower the gun, and I'll sell it to you.
There, I've unplugged it. I'll just take a few pounds of turkey, the Vegemator, and leave.
Don't you want to see the other guests?
Make my apologies to Collie and Mike.
Oh, well, you'll miss Jacob when he gets back from the liquor store.
Why is everybody so late? Just give my best to everyone. Goodbye.
Oh, Marjorie, I'm sorry I was rude earlier.
Don't give it a second thought. Have a great Thanksgiving, Charlotte. I know I will.
Phew. She bought it. I didn't think we could pull it off.
I was sure she'd detect the Vegemator was a fake, or catch me pulling quinoa balls from my pocket.
Well, she might figure it out in a few days after she finishes the mushrooms I sent with her.
You have to hook me up with your mushroom dealer. They really do the trick.
I do feel guilty about lying to Marjorie. She is one of my oldest friends.
You saw the way she reacted. We deserve kudos, not guilt, for giving her a drumstick to fiddle with.
She'll have an evening to remember with those mushrooms. I'll fess up tomorrow. Or Monday. Now, I have to get ready for the rest of the Friendsgiving guests. They should be arriving in less than half an hour.
We spared the other guests from a Marjorie encounter with 20 minutes to spare.
The real turkey should be cool enough for me to carve now. And I'll warm up the rest of the quinoa you brought. Can I get you something to eat while you're waiting?
No, thanks. I'll just enjoy Marjorie's meatballs.
Northern Lights by Jordan Elizabeth Henry. After Lisa survives a heart attack and open-heart surgery, she re-evaluates what she wants from life and tries to convince her fiancé, Candace, that life is too short to play it safe. But how much is each woman willing to sacrifice in order to hold on to the life they want? Lisa is in her 50s. She is recovering from open-heart surgery. Candace is in her 30s. She is Lisa's fiancé. The setting is Candace's bedroom, Thanksgiving Day. Lisa is lying in bed. Candace enters with a plate of Thanksgiving food.
I'm Jackie Roble, and I'm playing Candace.
I'm Pamela Vesper, and I'm playing Lisa.
Dinner is served, Medea.
Thank God, I'm famished. No offense, babe, but did you forget how to cook?
It's heart patient safe food. No salt, no fat.
No joy.
You'll have to get used to it, at least for now.
Think I could flirt my way into getting a big old glass of Jack Daniels to wash this down with?
Can't be that bad. Okay, I was wrong. But hey, look on the bright side. At least we're not spending Thanksgiving at the hospital.
Hey, it wasn't so bad. I got to wear that cool gown, which was basically like wearing assless chaps.
Pretty sexy.
And it gave you an excuse to uninvite your family to Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, yes. That went over so well.
Plus, it gave me a lot of time to think.
Should I be sitting down for this?
It's just an idea I have. A good idea.
I'll be the judge of that. Let's hear it.
Okay, here goes. I want to take a trip.
If it's to a bright white light in the distance, I'll save you the trouble. It's a trap.
I'm trying to be serious. There's a lot of things I've always wanted to do before I, well, you know, go into the light.
So this is a bucket list kind of thing.
Carpe. Carpe diem. Seize the days, boy.
Great, because quoting Dead Poets Society isn't maudlin.
Well, a sentiment applies.
You're talking about, what, a last hurrah?
Well, hopefully not last, but...
You're giving up.
No, not at all. The opposite, actually.
I don't like this. I'm not ready for bucket lists and final wishes. Not yet.
At some point, you're going to have to face it.
You are not dying.
Not yet. But look, I love how level-headed you are, but I'm ready to be reckless. I'm done with practical.
You're done with me.
I'm trying to say that I would understand if you were having second thoughts.
About the wedding? Lisa, where is this coming from?
I just showed my age in a pretty traumatic way. And you're young. You could find yourself a 20-something and go live happily ever after with her.
Didn't like 20-somethings even when I was a 20-something.
The point is, you can still call it off.
In sickness and in health, I intend to keep that promise.
You haven't even made any vows yet.
Accepting an engagement ring is a vow. Yes is a vow.
All I'm saying is I wouldn't blame you if...
That's enough. Stop trying to let me off the hook. I chose this hook, okay? Now tell me about this trip we're going to take.
You're not going to like it. You're going to say it's irresponsible, and you'll have a list a mile long of all the reasons we shouldn't go.
I'll hear you out. I don't see the problem as long as your heart heals and, you know, we can scrape the money together and Dr. Floyd thinks
it's a... See, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not telling you until you promise me. No stipulations. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Oh, Captain, my Captain, I swear on the life of our non-existent firstborn that I am on board with your crazy scheme you've dreamed up.
Okay, well, I've always wanted to go to Norway.
Norway? Wow, you couldn't have picked someplace warm? Tahiti, maybe?
It's romantic! Cozy fires, and hot chocolate, and dog sledding. And the thing I most want to see, the northern lights.
Hell, babe, we could just drive up to Michigan and see those.
Norway is what I want. I know you're not crazy about flying.
Well, I do tend to have panic attacks at 5,000 feet.
Oh, and I'd really love to go whale watching.
Which would be great if I didn't get seasick. Honey, I don't know about this.
You're right. It was a stupid idea. Never mind.
This is really what you want?
More than anything.
Well, okay.
Really?
Hey, carpe diem, right?
Prime viewing season is the dead of winter. It'll be really cold.
I'll finally have an excuse to buy a parka.
You can't even stand the winters here.
I'll suck it up. It's one trip, right?
Can you really be away from work that long?
I haven't taken a vacation in 3 years. They can do without me for a couple of weeks.
I know, it's bad timing.
We'll make it work. We'll have to downsize the wedding a bit, but that's all right.
You'd give up your dream wedding for this?
Honey, I'd just about anything to keep that smile on your face. You haven't looked this alive in weeks.
Wow. Thank you. I'm so relieved. I was sure you'd say no, and...
You're not going anywhere without me, so let's make a plan. We've got, what, a little over a year to prepare, so...
Whoa. I'm not waiting until next year.
Lisa, be serious. You're talking about going in, what, a month?
I'm going now.
Honey, you just had your chest cracked open. Dr. Floyd would never give the okay.
She doesn't need to know.
What you're talking about is dangerous.
I'll be fine. We'll be together. It will be magic.
No, it would be reckless and completely irresponsible.
You promised. You swore on your theoretical firstborn.
We're never going to have a baby if you die in the middle of nowhere, Norway.
Don't be dramatic.
Do you not understand how absolutely terrifying all of this was?
Right. The woman who was hooked up to machines for weeks doesn't grasp the gravity of the situation.
I thought you were dying.
I'm not afraid to die. I'm afraid of not doing this now while I have the chance.
Well, I'm afraid of you dying, Lisa. No.
I already bought the plane ticket.
You didn't.
I did.
Then I'll return them.
Non-refundable. Non-transferable.
Then I'll rip them up into tiny little pieces.
Electronic, dear. Nobody prints their plane tickets anymore.
Ugh, don't patronize me. I can't believe you could be this selfish.
I've earned the right to be a little selfish. I almost died.
Right. Almost. Your life was handed back to you, and now you want to risk it for no good reason?
For once, this isn't your decision. I get to be in control.
The subtext being I'm controlling you.
You said it, not me.
I'm trying to keep you alive.
I'm trying to stay alive, too.
No, I'm sorry, but I love you too much to let you kill yourself. The answer is no.
Fine.
Really?
Yeah, whatever, fine.
I think that's the right decision. We'll go next year, as long as you're feeling better. You have to give your body a chance to heal. I know you're disappointed, honey. Come on, don't sulk. Let's make a plan. This way you've got something to look forward to. Chin up, Buttercup.
You're right.
I know I am, but I'm still sorry.
Sure, I'll be all right. Would you mind running to the store and getting me some ginger ale?
Of course, honey. You'll be okay?
I'll be fine.
I love you, you know.
I know.
Happy Thanksgiving, honey.
Candace exits. Lisa waits a moment, then scribbles a note and leaves it on the bedside table. She gets out of bed, quickly gets dressed, and packs a bag. Lights fade as Lisa exits.
My name is Laura Arwood,
and my friend Kurt Benrud asked me to share this Thanksgiving memory. Thanksgiving for the Arwood family was ruled by ironclad traditions. My oldest sister, Annie, always hosted. Her husband, Jim, always roasted the turkey. I always made the dressing. My other brother-in-law, Billy, always made the pumpkin pie. Though no one ever claimed credit, there was always that sweet potato casserole with the little marshmallows on top. And Daddy always started Thanksgiving dinner with a prayer. My father was a lifelong Baptist. Aside from the Lord's Prayer, Baptists don't have standard prayers. They compose them spontaneously. Daddy was practiced at public praying. His sonorous baritone never faltered when delivering his unrehearsed words. Although his prayers were generally free-formed, he always began, "Dear Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for these blessings we are about to receive." And he always ended, "In Christ's name we pray, Amen." And we would all echo, "Amen." The first Thanksgiving without Daddy's baritone left us adrift. We not only lost our father, we lost our anchor to our parents' generation. Now the table held just my two sisters, their husbands, and me. Five people, none of whom knew how to pray out loud. But we were determined to continue our father's tradition. We sat there, uneasily eyeing each other. Finally, my sister Annie said, "I'll say the prayer, but y'all have to join in." She got off to a strong start, just like Daddy. "Dear Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for these blessings." Then she shared what she was personally thankful for that year. Then in a new twist, she asked each of us to add to the prayer. As each person shared their thanks, we all got caught up in the moment, especially Annie. Which may be why she forgot how the prayer was supposed to end, and ended up saying, "Thanks again, dear Lord, for everything. Talk to you again soon. Love, Annie." And we all echoed amen, then laughed.
Character Assassination by Robert O'Connell. A best-selling author just can't wait to tell a great story. On Thanksgiving, he meets a reader who is equally as impatient. Graham Colfax is an author, age 58. Lawrence Toomey is a detective, age 42. The scene is set in Colfax's living room.
There is a knock at the door. Colfax turns off the music and moves toward the door. He opens the door.
I'm Tom Haynes. I'm playing Lawrence Toomey.
I'm Kurt Benrud. I'm playing the part of Colfax.
I'm Cindy Fowler, and I'll be supplying stage directions.
Have any idea what time it is?
Good evening, sir. My name is Lawrence Toomey. I'm a detective. Might you have a moment to talk?
On Thanksgiving? Well, of course. Please, come in. It must be freezing out there. Please forgive my hesitation. I just get so few visitors out here at the cabin, particularly on holidays, and never this late.
My apologies, Mr. Colfax. I actually had quite a hard time finding the place. Although I suppose there's not much point in a best-selling author having a mountain hideaway if it were easy to find.
So you know who I am. As much as I crave privacy, I'm always slightly relieved to be recognized. Fame is a paradox, particularly for the terminally insecure. I was not aware that the local constabulary even had detectives.
Here in Boone? Well, that's correct. You'd be dealing with the Watauga County Sheriff up here.
Well, Detective Toomey, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Since you're holding neither handcuffs nor a warrant, I must assume that I'm safe for the time being. Please, take off your coat and have a seat. May I fix you a cup of tea or a coffee? I don't have any turkey or stuffing. That's not my thing, if you will. I imagine a wassail or a hot toddy would be out of the question, since you are on duty.
Nothing for me, sir, but thank you for offering.
Please, I get enough of sir on the lecture circuit. Feel free to call me Graham. And do you prefer Lawrence or Larry?
Please call me Lawrence. You have such a gift for words, Graham.
Thank you. If only I were humble enough to protest.
That might be tricky with that Edgar Award on the shelf behind you.
I suppose so. Toomey, by the way, is a great cop name. I'm already envisioning a generational epic about a family of Irish detectives in New York. Too bad it's been done to death. You don't seem to fit the mold of the sheriff's department. They're all kind of John Wayne-y up here.
I'm sorry if I misled you. I'm a detective, actually, in Charlotte.
Charlotte? Isn't this a bit out of your jurisdiction?
Yes. I mean, I'm not here in my typical capacity as a detective.
As much as I love a mystery, Lawrence, I'm getting a bit nervous. You don't seem like the typical obsessed fan. If you're not here as a detective...
Well, I am here as a detective of sorts, but I am also a fan of your work. It's kind of a long story.
Well, Lawrence, I suppose if you were going to Kathy Bates me, you'd have done so already. Since you're here, why don't you relax and start from the beginning? I assume that, like me, you don't have a family. Otherwise, you'd be sitting in front of a football game with your trousers unbuckled by now. I'm between projects, and I am always looking for new ideas.
Well, thank you, Graham. I really am a great fan of your work, but not in any creepy stalker way.
That's a relief. However, many of the creepy stalkers fail to recognize these traits in themselves. I had one who sent me letters every day made up exclusively of excerpts from my books. They got more and more depraved until I had to get a restraining order. For a narcissist like me, I found it quite difficult to cut her off.
You're very witty, Graham. That's what got my attention the first time we met.
More intrigue, I see. Are you an amateur writer?
Me? No way. I could never... Well, I met you when I was in high school. I'm from Monroe.
No. You were at Monroe High?
Mm-hmm.
It was my first ever public presentation. I was teaching at Sun Valley at the time.
Yes, I was there. I was a junior taking AP English, and you came in for an assembly about writing.
I'll be damned. I had just published Legal Tender. It was through a tiny publisher that quickly went out of business. I kept boxes of them in my trunk. My friend was head of that English department there and got me in as a favor. I think I sold one book.
You did. It was me.
No kidding. I hope you still have it. Since it's been out of print so long, I hear they go for a couple of $100 on eBay. Mm-hmm. Did I sign it? It might be worth even more.
Yes, Graham, you did sign it, but I would never part with it. You see, I became a cop because of your character, Paul Thorner.
I'm flattered that you even read it, let alone were inspired by it. However, even I have to admit that it wasn't very good.
I would never criticize your work, but it wasn't the story that caught my attention. It was the character. The way you spoke through your dialogue. Well, I can hear the same tone speaking with you now. I suppose I was moved enough to become both a fan and a detective. And this is where my dilemma lies.
Dilemma? Please go on, Lawrence.
I asked you a question at the assembly. I asked you where you came up with the ideas for your stories.
Oh, let me guess. I said something like, I get my ideas from life, conversations, experiences, little things. I probably told you that I kept a list of story ideas on a little pad I carry around. It's actually true, and I still do it the same way today.
Well, that was the gist of it, yeah. But then you said something else, kind of a joke, really. You said that the sad part was that some of your best story ideas were personal and confidential. You said you couldn't write the best ones until somebody died. You said it was a sad irony for a mystery writer.
Did I? I don't recall that. I'm sure it was just a joke.
Well, it's why I'm here.
I don't understand.
When I was promoted to detective, I started out working cold cases. It's a way for the department to let us get our feet wet.
That seems to be a reasonable policy.
I was doing some background work on an unsolved case involving a young actress whose body was found strangled near the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center. We had a suspect, a stage producer who had sexually abused her. We got that out of him during an interrogation, but we just couldn't shake his alibi.
I see where you're going with this. Lawrence, Silver Screen.
Of course. The story is nearly identical to your breakout bestseller.
Sadly, life often imitates art, even tragedy.
I only recognized the coincidence because I was such a fan. I read all of your books multiple times. But then, I dug a little deeper.
Deeper? Into what?
I found two more cases that, at least tangentially, seem to match major plot lines in some of your books.
Interesting. I suppose with 22 novels, 18 of them bestsellers, something like that is bound to happen. I imagine you'd find a similar success rate with Robert Parker or Sue Grafton.
Well, there's more. I looked more deeply into the actress's background. It seems that she took an acting class a few years earlier.
Pretty normal for an actress, I presume.
You worked briefly at the same acting studio as a diction coach.
Did I?
When she attended. I found someone who remembered that she used to confide in you.
Assuming that's true, it's hardly significant. I'm sure most people have had the pleasure of interacting with someone who later met with foul play.
Certainly. But, well, then there's also your novel, Press for Time.
About the dry cleaner who was actually a guard at Bergen-Belsen.
Yes. We have a cold case with a victim named Bernie Stewart. He was a dry cleaner in Dilworth who was killed in a hit and run.
And what, because I briefly lived off of East Boulevard?
You were actually a customer of his. We also think he may have been Bernhard Strasser, a Nazi prison guard who escaped Germany after the war.
Sounds like he got what was coming to him. Well, you may as well give me the last one.
Super Tuesday.
Ah, about the building super who spent his day off every Tuesday looking for the gangbangers who hooked his daughter on drugs.
Carlos Sanchez, found stabbed in an alley off Central Avenue near Little Mexico, 4 years after you lived in his building.
Jesus, a kid happens to hear me speak when I'm still a nobody. Somehow I inspire him to be a detective who just happens to work in my area. He also turns out to be such a big fan that he sees a pattern linking the books to unsolved deaths. You know, this is such a bizarre story. I'll bet if I brought this as a synopsis to my publisher, he'd call me a hack and toss me down the stairs.
I actually think it's quite clever.
So what happens in the story next? Do you try to get me to confess? Or wait, how about if you shake me down for a blackmail payoff?
Graham, I don't think you understand.
Oh, I get it. You know, this is exactly why I said what I did to you back then. Sometimes you hear a great story idea, but you can't write it without ruining somebody's life. No amount of literary license will keep someone from being exposed. And in this story, it would be me.
No, Graham. I would never expose you. That would end your career. I need you to keep writing. Here, look at this.
Toomey pulls a piece of paper out of his pocket. He unfolds it and hands it to Colfax.
What is this?
It's a copy of a report from the Charlotte Police.
White male found in Freedom Park near the amphitheater. Presumed drowned. No identification. So?
The victim. It's Avram Horowitz.
My first agent. But it says unidentified. Wait, are you trying to tell me...
I killed him. Yes, for you.
Lawrence, I know he was a cheap prick, but...
I looked up your lawsuit with him. He cheated you out of your first two novels. You had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Now you can tell the story.
This is insane. I need a moment to think. I mean, I always wanted to eviscerate that scumbag in a novel. I suppose it would be pretty hypocritical of me to be offended.
I just want you to keep writing.
I can't tell you how incredibly flattering this all is. All I ever wanted to do was to tell stories. You were right about what I said back in the day. Many of my best stories were blocked by people's privacy. I guess after a while I just couldn't wait any longer. The actress wasn't the first, you know.
Really? Who? I mean, if you don't mind me asking.
It's actually a relief to get it out, especially to a fan. I used to go to a writer's group at Queen's University. There was a lovely woman there named Arlene. She was originally from Scotland.
Highland Fling? You published that before you were famous.
Yes, but it put me on the map. Oh, I owe a lot to Arlene. She liked my critiquing style and asked if I could take a look at her story of immigrating to the U.S. It was an amazing tale. I immediately wanted to steal it, but it would have ruined her life and possibly those of several family members.
So you changed her name to Elspeth and told the story?
Pretty much.
And Arlene?
I knew that she liked to walk by the river at dawn. I stabbed her in Cordelia Park so it would look like a junkie did it. A guy got arrested for it. It bothered me for a while, but I was able to find out that they just folded it into three other murders that he actually had done. The cops should have known better.
They probably did. We have a lot of pressure to clear cases. But I suppose that neither of us here is here for a morality lesson.
Clearly. I actually feel that a weight has been lifted off of me. Since you are clearly off duty, I insist that you have a drink with me. I have a very old bottle of scotch back here.
Colfax pours two glasses and hands one to Toomey.
Why, thank you, Graham.
Toomey takes a drink.
I am completely energized by this sequence of events. I may start a new book in the morning. The more I think about this story, the more I love it. I just cannot wait to tell it.
Toomey drops his glass and falls to the floor.
I'm sorry you won't get to read it, but I suppose that you already know how it ends.
Puts music back on.
Novaween, written by Kevin Michael Wesson.
I'm Phil Lewis. I would be playing the boss.
I'm Fred Corlett. I'll be playing Arnold.
I'm Kurt Benrood. I'll be playing Gary.
And we've been joined by Jackie Roble in the part of Rachel and Pamela Vesper with the necessary stage directions.
Arnold, dressed in business casual, sips coffee by a coffee maker in the break room. He sips. Gary enters, dressed in a turkey costume. He pours himself a cup.
Is this Folgers? Good job on this coffee, Arnold.
Arnold stares at his costume.
You were right. This is a much better call than the Maxwell House. I think it's better than, well, whatever Jim brought in last week. Chock full of nuts, I think. But then again, I'm not a French roast guy.
Gary, why the hell are you dressed as a turkey?
Casual Friday. Gobble, gobble. Am I right?
You can't be serious.
Oh, no. I'm kidding. Lighten up. Geez, you got something against holidays or something?
No, I don't. But it's just not something you wear to a professional office job, Gary.
What? It's the perfect time to wear a turkey costume. We're still close enough to Halloween, and we are close enough to Thanksgiving. So we are in the Goldilocks zone for turkey attire. Can you think of a better time to wear a turkey costume?
There isn't a good time to wear a turkey costume, Gary. Unless you're a mascot for the Tampa Bay Turkeys, let alone
Bay Turkeys? What sport is that?
I just made them up, Gary.
Rachel, dressed in business casual, enters. She pours a cup of coffee.
You send that presentation to me yet?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you're a lifesaver, Rachel. I'll do it first thing when I'm off break.
Folgers?
So much better, right?
Rachel, don't you notice anything about Gary? Anything unusual?
What? It's Casual Friday. Gobble, gobble, am I right?
Rachel, you can't be serious.
No, I'm kidding. Lighten up. Jeez, you got something against holidays or something?
No, but...
I think it's good to be festive.
It's not festive, it's...
It's double festive. Perfect time to wear a turkey costume. Close enough to Halloween, close enough to Thanksgiving.
Boss is going to be pissed. He doesn't even like casual Fridays. He fired Erica last year for wearing flip-flops. I can't imagine how he would feel about a giant turkey suit.
Boss enters. Business formal. He pours a cup of coffee.
Is this a Folgers? You guys were right. This is much better call than the Maxwell House. I think it's better than whatever Jim brought in last week, chock full of nuts or something. I hate Jim, but then I'm not a French roast guy.
He notices Gary.
Gary, why the hell are you dressed up as a turkey?
Well, sir...
You're trying to get a promotion or something? Now, this is the kind of casual Friday I can get behind. Gobble, gobble, am I right?
Sir, you can't be serious.
Oh, shut it, Arnold. Quit being a little prick. I'm just kidding. Lighten up already. Geez, you got something against holidays or something?
What? No, but, sir, I...
Shut it! Gary, you not only get the promotion, you rightfully get the Novaween holiday bonus.
Novaween?
And I haven't tasted coffee this good in 25 years. It's, what's it called?
Folgers.
Folgers. I love it. You bring this in, too?
No, that's my coffee.
That's it, Arnold. Go back to your cubicle. And from now on, Gary is your boss.
Gobble, gobble. Am I right?
Hey, that's the spirit.
Boss slaps Gary on the back.
Now, everybody, get back to work.
Macaroni au fromage by Wendy Soroka. It's Thanksgiving Day. Annie walks into the kitchen. Her older sister Jeannie is in the next room.
I'm Jackie Roble, and I'm playing Annie.
I'm Pamela Vesper, and I'm playing Jeannie.
What smells so good? Oh, seriously? That's worth a picture. And maybe just a little taste.
Busted! Still tempted by Mom's mac and cheese, huh, Annie?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Remember that Thanksgiving? How old were you, like 5? We were all still in the kitchen and you broke into the mac and cheese and ate the crispy part off?
The crispy part is seriously the best.
And then you tried to tell us that the dog did it?
It wasn't that unreasonable an explanation.
Except that Lucky was a 15-year-old Chihuahua mix who hadn't been able to jump on the table since before you were born.
Well, there was that. The baby asleep?
Yep, finally. I've got the baby monitor set up in there, so I'm good.
You should take a nap while she's down. You look awful.
What? And miss Thanksgiving dinner? Sleep is for wimps. Where are Mom and Dad anyway, and Jim?
Mom's napping. She said she'd get up when the timer beeps for the turkey. Or the smoke alarm goes off, whichever comes first.
So like normal.
And Jim and Dad ran to the store because Jim forgot to put the diapers in the diaper bag.
He had one job. And he's got Dad in cahoots with him, too.
Jeannie, you've got one too many plates out.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I forgot. I'm sorry.
No worries.
How are you doing? We haven't really talked about it in a while. Not since...
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. You know, just busy.
If you need me, I'm here. Jim can take the baby for a while now. He's really starting to get the hang of the whole dad thing.
Well, that's good news. I was beginning to wonder if he was up to the task.
Annie.
I mean, my niece deserves the best, so if he can't hack it...
Jeez, cut him some slack, Mussolini. Sarah's not one of those easy babies. We're both like zombies.
At least you're not trying to work right now.
Yeah, well, I wanted to go back this fall. You've been AWOL, so I didn't get to tell you about the position that opened up in the poli-sci department at UW. I made top 3, but I didn't get it.
Oh my god, you made the top 3, though. That's great.
Yeah, but I didn't get it.
But you made the top 3.
Yeah, but I didn't get it. So no work for me.
Oh, crap.
Yup, crap.
Ugh, warm soda. Wait, how come this is the first I'm hearing about this? I know I haven't seen you in a bit, but I live with Mom and Dad, and they didn't say anything.
I didn't tell them. I didn't want them to get their hopes up and be disappointed. Get some ice.
Nope. Then it would be like I'm officially drinking it before Thanksgiving dinner.
Child.
Adult. You know, you never should have left the university at Spokane.
Annie.
No, seriously, why couldn't Jim have moved there?
No jobs for him there. We've been through this. It just made more sense.
It sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love having you here in Seattle, but I think it blows you finally get your dream job and you give it up for him.
Okay, old news. What's the deal here? Does this have to do with Frank?
No! Maybe.
You know, Jim thinks you're so much better off without him.
I don't give a crap what Jim thinks. Why'd you have to tell him any of it? I mean, my love life is none of his business.
You came to our house. In tears. Jim was there.
We were on your porch, alone, until Jim came outside all freaked out because he didn't know what to do with his own daughter when she cries.
We were out there for, what, nearly 45 minutes? And he needed help. I couldn't leave him all alone with the baby while you had your meltdown.
But you should have been able to. I'm your sister. I needed you, not Jim. Jim, who isn't man enough to take care of his baby for an hour while your little sister is trying to figure out if she should leave her boyfriend of 4 years.
Oh, my God. Listen to yourself. You're jealous of your niece.
That is so not it. I just didn't want to share the saga of my life with your husband.
I just thought, you know, he was there. He's got male insight. Maybe he could, I don't know, offer advice, make things better.
I didn't want him to make things better. I didn't want anyone to make things better. I just wanted my big sister because Frank was breaking my heart.
Stupid Frank.
Yeah, stupid Frank.
So it's really finally over this time?
Yeah.
Ugh, warm soda. I'm not gone, you know. You can still come over and talk.
Get some ice.
Nope, this soda is off the record.
Child.
Takes one to know one.
I'm not ready to share you.
I've been sharing you with stupid Frank and his kids for the last 4 years.
Yeah, but you're the big sister. You're supposed to be the mature one. I'm the baby. I still live with Mommy and Daddy.
You're hopeless. Are you going to miss the kids?
Yes and no. They're good kids, but Frank always kept me, I don't know, sort of separate from them. They were always his kids, and I was just never really part of them. But he was fine using my money to take care of them when he was broke, which was always. And then he'd get angry with me after, always for some random thing. He was just embarrassed that he couldn't take care of his own kids.
You are so much better off without him.
Is that what Jim thinks?
It's what I think, and probably any rational human being on the planet.
I thought you liked him. You never said anything while I was dating him.
I did like him. He was charming. Doesn't mean I think he was right for you. He wanted to live like an adolescent forever, and you had your life together. And he had so much baggage. But what was I supposed to say? He was your choice. Nothing I said would have made a difference except to get you mad at me.
I really hate it when you're right.
About Frank?
No, about me being mad if you criticize my boyfriend.
So maybe you can stop criticizing my husband.
Maybe he can stop giving me advice.
Unlikely. Jim loves to give advice. Oh, crud. That's Sarah. I'll be right back.
I'll be here, all alone, with my warm soda. And the mac and cheese. Just one little taste.
Busted!
Woof! Ooh, let me take some pictures of my beautiful niece. Who's the cutest baby ever? You are. Who's got the bestest auntie ever? You do.
Okay, see? I'm here with her. But I'm here for you, big sister and mommy. I got this.
Jeannie, there's something else. I was going to tell everyone tonight, but I think I'm going to need an ally.
That sounds ominous. What is it?
I'm moving to Paris.
What?
A job came up in the restoration department of the Musée d'Orsay for someone with expertise in both multispectral and hyperspectral imaging. I applied and I got it. I start next month.
Paris?
Yeah, Paris.
But that's, like, really far away.
Yeah.
Are you sure? I mean, this isn't about Frank, is it? Because Seattle's a pretty big place, and it's not like you're going to run into him.
It's not about Frank.
Do Mom and Dad know about this?
Nope, I didn't want them to try to talk me out of it.
Wow, sorry, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the idea that you'll be living in another country. It's so far, I'll never see you.
We can Skype and email and text and you can visit, you and Sarah and Jim.
Why didn't you tell me?
I am telling you.
I mean, while you were deciding, you've never made these huge decisions without telling me.
You were preoccupied.
Come on.
Okay, well, I just wanted to decide on my own, you know? Without any family members with agendas giving me advice.
Like my husband?
Maybe. You guys are a unit now. It's creepy. Everything I tell you, you tell him, and then he chimes in like he already knows about things. Things I didn't tell him.
Am I not supposed to tell him things?
No, it's just he's supposed to pretend he doesn't know until I tell him.
You know how convoluted that sounds.
It's worked for Mom and Dad for years.
I guess I'll have to explain the rules to him. Before we come visit you in Paris. Wait, can we even have Thanksgiving in Paris? Isn't it against some rule?
If you guys are there, it will be Thanksgiving no matter what.
Are you sure this isn't about Frank?
I've wanted to live in Paris since I signed up for French in middle school. When Frank and I first started dating, he made me think it was a possibility for us, but then it became clear he was tied to his kids here. And what would he do in Paris? He doesn't even speak French. He can barely hold down a job speaking English. So I put that dream aside. But now there's no reason not to go. I'm single. I have a good job waiting for me. Why shouldn't I go?
I don't know. Maybe because you haven't lived outside of your parents' house except for the partial semester you lived in the dorms?
Not fair. You know I'll only live here so I can save up money for a house one day.
And because I'll miss you.
You have a new family now, new priorities.
It doesn't mean I don't need my sister.
I'm not dying. I'm moving to Paris.
You'll miss so much of Sarah growing up.
Yeah, I hate that. But I can't put my life on hold anymore. I'm 30 years old. At some point I'll get tied down, but now, right now, I've got to take my shot.
Is that what I am, tied down?
Would you move somewhere if Jim couldn't get a job there?
Of course not.
Then, yeah, tied down, but in a good way, maybe.
So, is the plan to stay there, like, forever? What if you want to come back? Will there be a job for you? Have you thought about what you want 5 years from now? Oh, God, what if you meet some French man and you get married and have little French babies? You could get totally tied down in Paris.
I'm really not into that kind of thing.
Be serious.
I can't think about 5 years from now or a whole bunch of what-ifs. When Paris doesn't work for me anymore, I'll make a change.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Mom and Dad are going to have a meltdown.
Yeah.
Fine. Bust open that mac and cheese. You better take a few bites. You're going to need them.
Oh, God, I'll miss this.
Is it too gauche to toast to Paris with mac and cheese?
As long as we use the crispy part, I think we're okay.
A votre santé.
Merci beaucoup.
Oh, little one.
I know it's hard to think about now, but are you planning on another one?
Oh, God. I don't know. Maybe when the childbirth amnesia kicks in.
I think you should. She deserves to have a sibling.
And that's all the time we've got left for A Little Drama for Turkey Day. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of the readers who gave me a hand with this. And thanks to Al Petaway and Amy White for letting me use their song for the intro, outro, and between-the-scenes music. Once again, from Triangle Radio Reading Service and all of us, happy Thanksgiving.